tonight's forum is logging, old growth forests, and the spotted owl. What future for Northwest forests? And we want to talk tonight about an issue that is very important to this region of the country, but also to, I think, all of us, wherever we're from. This whole question of development or not, or an endangered species, and what to do about that, how to protect jobs and habitat. Chuck showed me tonight an article from the Chelan Valley Mirror that says the Forest Service has just released a 5-point interim management plan that tries to protect both the northern spotted owl and timber industry jobs. And it's a compromise plan, no question about it, a 5-point compromise plan here that won't be loved by anyone on the issue. And this is to follow up on having placed the spotted owl on the endangered species list on June 22nd. So anyway, tonight we're going to hear from two panelists who have...
Excuse me, that's the threatened species list, not the endangered.
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry, threatened species list. Okay.
They're quite a difference.
Okay, thank you for that. Two panelists tonight who are going to present different viewpoints, and then we'll open it up to all of you to hear what you think about this whole issue and your views. The purposes of forums at Holden isn't to arrive at any conclusion, but just to engage in a lively conversation on a topic and hopefully to get insights through talking with one another. You're all experts, so we just bring these panelists up here to get us started off, but we do want to hear from all of you. And so we'll ask, and then we'll end at 9:30 also. We'll ask Tom Hulsinger-Fuchs, who is Holden's staff coordinator, co-coordinator, to begin.
I think that I was chosen for this job or on this panel is because we just had a meeting here probably 2 months ago with the Forest Service, where they came in and were pretty much promoting us developing quite a hiking trail system throughout the valley, and I was one of the few people who was pretty much anti-Forest Service and anti-new growth. And I think that at some point, as Al Pitcher said so well tonight, we have to say no. We have to start saying no. And I just want to talk about a few things, most of what I've learned about forestry, and this is a pretty new role for me to be in. Not that I'm not the role of radical, but the role of radical for the forest is in this book called Fragile Majesty, and it's probably about the latest book that I've seen about the battle for North America's last great forest. And that is here in Washington and Oregon. And it is basically our land. Public owned, U.S. Forest Service operated national forests. And the forest industry, as I've seen it, are the bad people. And they're the people who got rich, cutting their own millions of acres that they own in Washington, Oregon, and now are coming after the public lands. And they're a very, very strong lobbying organization, and they are willing and want to go out and get every available tree.
Excuse me again, who is they? I missed that.
They, the forest industry. The
forest industry.
Okay. Industry, okay. I'm talking about the small, the little ones, the big ones. Mostly the big ones is where I'm placing the most blame for what's happening. We only have 5% of our native forests left in the United States, 5%, okay? In 1949, that was post-World War II, we cut 2.6 billion board feet. Last year, 16 billion board feet were cut of Washington and Oregon alone. 16 billion board feet. That's really hard to imagine. What does that work out in like truckloads, but basically it's log trucks lined for 20,000 miles. 20,000 miles of log trucks. That's the equivalent of 16 billion board feet. Washington, Oregon alone. The timber industry is basically modernizing. I mean, they're getting more modern, they're getting up-to-date plants that are basically cutting the logs without a lot of involvement from people. And so where we're losing the most jobs is not because there's a spotted owl controversy. It's because the whole place is, because one person with a chainsaw can cut down a lot more forest than one person with an axe. And we've moved that way, we've moved forward through a whole progression, and we will continue to move forward with that. But the biggest problem that I see in that we have a problem with right now is that in our national forests, not that there's a problem with that we don't have enough lumber, but the lumber is being taken out and being exported to other countries. And it's illegal to do that, but there's two really very well-known loopholes, one of them called direct substitution, which basically allows the forest industry to take their own second growth forests and subplant them for a high quality 600 or 700 year old Douglas fir that's cut out of a national forest. And direct substitution has to do with, not with quality of the tree, but board foot. So it doesn't make any difference if you have a scab that's a 12 inch scab, you can have enough 12 inch scabs, you can exchange that for a 600 year old old growth and you can export it to another country. Another one is through third party substitutions, and basically the forest industry cuts the timber down in our forests and then sells it to another person who sells it for export. In this way, Weyerhaeuser, who made $1.5 billion last year, in 1 year, on exports, $1.5 billion. They make a 62% profit by export and a 10% profit by cutting up those logs. So clearly, to export a log is more profitable for them, and they will protect that to the end. That's the biggest lobby force, is that they want to protect their right to export. In 1987, 2.6 billion board feet were exported from Washington. That's 37% of the harvest, okay? 100,000 acres of federal land have been clear cut in the last 40 years. 100,000 acres. This is our land. Forest Service says that they work on a policy that is most good for the most people. And I'm basically saying that the Forest Service is running a policy where it's most good for the forest industry. A few people who are getting very rich. It's not an ecological way of handling our forests. It's called sustained yield. It is not sustained yield. They're basically cutting the best land. They put the worst land or the most scenic land in parks. Glacier Park is a perfect example of that. It's a wonderful area. There's a lot of trees on it, but it's not a loggable area. The logs are really not in an area that you can get them out, so they make a park out of it. They're taking the most general use land, which is level land that they can cut their logs out of. It's basically ecocide. We're sort of diminishing the diversity of our forests. And then when we plant forests back, we plant them back with the help of the forest industry, who is cutting down the diversity by using seeds pods from maybe 100 or 200 trees. So we have exact duplicate trees, which allow for basically bugs and insects and canker root and all sorts of problems to be much easier to enter a forest. Plus, they tend to plant in one or two species. Douglas fir are worth a lot more money than spruce. They don't plant spruce. Spruce isn't worth any money. So they want to plant the trees that grow to the right height. So owls don't have a chance. We're going to lose them. It may not be in our lifetime, but as I see it, we are going to lose it because of diversity. Spotted owl. The Forest Service has come up with some real insane concepts. One is called minimum viable population. They try and figure out what sort of population do they have for spotted owls for them to survive. And then when they find a spotted owl, they set off 2,000 acres for these spotted owls. And then they cut all around it. And so those spotted owls are fine, but as long as they're producing, but they cannot find other owls to produce with because the Forest Service wants to cut all around them. And it has to do with kind of making sure that the forest industry is fed with trees. And it's not trees for our use, it's trees for export for Japan, Asia, China, Korea. So, I just think it's incredible what we're doing. This is, I don't really like this newspaper, but I think that this is an incredible picture. And this has, all those white areas you see in this are clear cuts of Mount Hood National Forest in Oregon. And I think that it's appalling. I don't believe in everything that this magazine says. I think it's really a shock value sort of newspaper. So I don't agree with it fully, but I just think that the pictures alone, and there's some wonderful pictures, so I'm going to pass that around and you can certainly look at that. And I think we need to stop it. I think we need to stop exports. Period. I think we just need to stop it. That would sort of solve 90% of our problems. The people that are saying that we're losing our jobs to the spotted owl and are hanging their owls in effigy are not going to fight the big timber industry. They can't. They'll be outbidded if they do. You know, Weyerhaeuser can bid three or more cents per board foot and outbid a small mill if they're starting to raise some cane about this industry. It's going to take us to do that. We got to stop at some point and say, these forests are worth more to us than they are to you, the forest industry. The United States, okay, wait a minute. The forest industry loses a 1/4 to 3/4, they lose money on their timber sales. We sell it at a loss. I can't believe we do it.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll hear from Chuck Cooner, who's on the teaching staff this week and teaches at Concordia College in Oregon, and he's gonna have a different viewpoint.
There are a number of things that we need to recognize when we talk about the forestry situation in America today and about the preservation of the forests, the preservation of spotted owls, and this sustainable yield concept. First of all, I want to make sure that we talk in terms that are reasonable and rational. A figure that was quoted as 16 billion board feet of lumber cut in Washington and Oregon. And if you'll read the article from the Chelan paper, the request for this coming year is for 3.5 billion board feet of timber to be cut, not 16 billion. The request from the timber industry was 5 billion. The request from the Natural Defense Resources Council, which is the environmental lobby group, was for a cut of 3.9 billion. So the compromise that the federal agencies are proposing is actually below what the NDRC was requesting in the first place. I think the spotted owl controversy is one that has to be recognized as a very complex problem that was certainly recognized as such by the committee that studied it and made the recommendations to set aside old growth timber for the preservation of the owl. Unfortunately, ecosystems like forest ecosystems are not simple structures. They are complex interacting systems. You do as much harm to the ecosystem if you artificially preserve it as you do to artificially log it and not replenish it. In this way, and this may seem to be a rather tough thing to swallow, but I think it's important to understand that the turnover in the forest is a natural phenomenon. Old growth forests are an aberrancy in nature. They are not the norm, they never were the norm, and never will be. there certainly have been stands of old growth forests that have appeared through eons of time. We have some in America right now that have been around for a long time. If we set about to artificially preserve the old growth forests and are successful in preserving those old growth forests, and let me complete this thought before you turn me out, tune me out. If we successfully preserve the old growth forests, we will surely destroy the old growth forests. Because if we preserve all of the old trees in any given stand that you're talking about, whether it's in the redwoods of California or in the Douglas fir old growth of Oregon, if we preserve all of those trees, in the, for example, right now in Oregon and Washington, there are 2 million acres of old growth forests that are untouched by the logging industry as of yet.
If de facto or in parks and wilderness areas?
In parks and wilderness areas and on private land as well. But there are 2 million acres of old growth forest in those two states that have been that have not been cut. If we preserve all 2 million acres, what will happen is a disastrous fire at some point in the future, which will wipe out those old growth forests and prevent us from having substantial old growth forests for eons. My proposal would be, in that respect, to regenerate old growth forests on a sustained yield basis in the same way that you do your short-term forests. Obviously, your term of regeneration is going to be 400 or 500 years instead of 150 years, but it's still a sustainable yield concept in old growth forests. Is just as viable as it is in younger forests that are harvestable at an earlier age. There's no question that we need old growth forests. And I think a problem ensues when we begin to lump forest agents of the Forestry Service, corporations that run forestry operations, JIPO loggers, anybody that utilizes the forest as a natural resource into a self-serving, greedy bunch of individuals who are out to rape the land and take home all the profits and you know, store them in their Swiss bank accounts. The reality is that by far the majority of people involved in the timber industry are people who take their daily bread in a reasonable amount at that. From it. I'm talking about the professional foresters, I'm talking about the everyday lumberman and their family who, by any stretch of the imagination, are not wealthy people, who live from the forest as a resource and who respect the forest as a result of that and utilize that resource knowing full well that they want to pass that on to their children. I do not know of any lumberman that I have met in Oregon, in my home state, who I would consider to be anti-environmentalists. All of them that I know of, that I've talked to personally and that I've worked with, have been as environmentally aware as any of the Greenpeace movement people or any of the ecologically activated groups in America. It is a perception of the utilization of resource is, which is different rather than motivation. These people are not heartless, cruel, illiterate land rapists. There's an interesting book in the library here at Holden done by a gentleman, and it's a great big book. It's in this library on the right here. And I happened to be reading yesterday, just going through it, and in his introduction, the reason for him writing the book was to attempt to portray, to flesh out his feeling that the timber industry was in fact run by people such as that. But his own observations after traveling through the four Northwest states producing timber and British Columbia was that that kind of person was by far the exception in the industry rather than the rule. I think you'll find evidence from several areas around the Northwest of very ecologically responsible timber industries, companies who have for many years practiced the types of programs that do in fact provide for sustained yield, for protection of the environment, and for all the things that anybody that's ecologically minded wants to protect. So in short, I think the question is not a simple question. No one is proposing that we cut all the old growth forests. The question is, how do we best utilize the resource we have to provide the maximum number of jobs for people and provide for protection of the environment at the same time?
Okay, thank you both here. I hope you all appreciate that we've got a diversity of opinion here on the panel, and I can sense that some of you are eager to share your viewpoint too. Let's, rather than addressing questions to them, why don't we try to hear from some of you about what your opinions are, especially in terms of envisioning creative solutions to this impasse, or really what your viewpoint is on this. But if you have a question, of course, you're going to ask it of the panelists, too. But,
Well, a question with very little knowledge of the concern, but a fair amount of knowledge about animals and the wildlife and whatnot. Are the spotted owls located in an area that they stay in, or do they move from area to area where the old growth is at, that's conducive to their habitat?
They'll move.
In other words, they're like most animals. They'll move to where it's compatible to what they want.
They will.
Will they not?
They will. In fact, one of the restrictions on loggers right now has been that they cannot come within a certain distance of their nesting sites because the ecologists that are studying the spotted owl do not want the movement out of those areas during the nesting season. They will move out even during the nesting season and abandon their young.
Yeah, okay, that part I understand, but I mean, they are a semi-migratory animal in that they will move to an area that is favorable to them.
Okay, can I just say too that, well, I guess I'm supposed to be more of a moderator here, but anyway, the people also talk about the spotted owl is more of an indicator species, so it's not just the question of the spotted owl as the end, it's of viewing them as an indicator species of when a habitat is threatened. Did you have a hand here?
Well, yeah, that's one point that's made. One of the major problems with spotted owl is they can only nest successfully in old growth on the west side. When they try to nest, they have found nests in second growth stands in forest plantations. We found a nest in a 35-year-old Weyerhaeuser plantation. Although last year they did successfully nest in a San Francisco park, the problem is that their chicks get preyed upon quite heavily by other owls. And the only place where they've successfully seen the lay eggs and rear young have been in old growth on the west side. On the east side, they're more generalist. Over here, you find them pretty much in all types of forest, wherever you don't find the gray owl. That seems to be the number one predator on the spotted owls.
Isn't that true that we have spotted owls in Holden Valley here?
Yeah, there probably are. I don't know that for a fact. But I know
somebody
down around
Somebody.
They spotted the spotted owl?
No, I hear that.
I'd like to know who that was.
Well, I think Gertrude told me that.
What?
I think Gertrude told me that if she's here tonight.
Okay, go ahead. I sense that you have some knowledge in this area. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you do and what your opinion is on this?
My name is John Kershaw, and I'm working on a PhD in forest management, primarily silviculture at the University of Washington. And I've worked for the Forest Service as a consultant for the Forest Service in the East. I've also worked for the Nature Conservancy, as well as a private consultant for some of the industry.
And what do you think we should do about this issue? I want to hear from all of you. Let's not just ask questions, okay? But I mean,
if someone came to me and said, "What would we do about old growth?" I would say, "Let's save it. Let's lock it up right now." But getting back to some of the things, I'm sorry,
Chuck
was talking about. We've got to come up with ways to produce old growth in the future. Setting it aside is not the answer. We've got to come up with some longer term management ideas. We've got to go in and even aggressively manage some areas of old growth that exist now. And setting it aside is not the solution. Harvesting is not the solution. We've got to come up with some kind of a management scheme aimed at producing old growth structure. And that's the key, old growth structure. It doesn't necessarily have to be old trees. If you go into some of the managed second growth stands, Fort Blakely, it's a small forest industry located in southwestern Washington. They're managing their timber on a 90-year rotation. That's their company policy. We took Jerry Franklin on a field trip, and he was surprised looking at their managed stands because they met every one of his criteria for an old growth stand except for the large dead material on the ground.
Who's Jerry?
Jerry Franklin is a professor at the University of Washington. He also has a joint appointment with the Forest Service. He's been pretty much the spearhead of a lot of the old growth controversy. Terms like new forestry, that's a Jerry Franklin term, which Forest Service tends to be going toward this concept of new forestry or new perspectives in forestry. Working across the hall from Jerry, I'm not quite sure what that is yet, but they're going toward that. But it's a start. We've got to come in and take a more broad landscape perspective on our forest. And the timber industry isn't the evil, the Forest Service isn't the evil, the spotted owl isn't the evil, the environmental groups aren't the evil. It's just that we need to sit down and really begin long-term planning.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I'm a forester, right? Well, worked in the private industry for 25 years, and I appreciate the remarks about foresters. Some of us are good guys. In fact, when I, the Society of American Foresters sent out bumper stickers this year to everybody who's a member, and what it said is, for a forester, every day is Earth Day. And anyway, I don't work with Forest Service land, I work pretty much with private industry land. The spotted owl controversy, locking up all federal lands, would actually increase my business because it would intensify management of private industry lands, and it would give me more business. But I don't want to see that because I don't believe that if this needs to happen, it needs to happen on a more gradual basis than to say, hey, let's chop it off right now and old growth log. I think it finally comes down to the fact that we need to save more of the old growth. They can reduce the cut, 10% a year or whatever until they attain this goal. Still save the habitat for the spotted owl and have thousands of people not immediately displaced, but displaced a little bit at a time. That's the way I'd like to see it.
You hit your hand up.
Yeah, I just want to ask about what I consider somewhat the misinformation about the economics of log exports. My understanding of that is one of the reasons the timber industry is up in arms is because they've got contracts with Pacific Rim nations to export so many million board feet of raw unprocessed logs, one. And also that we're the only country in the world that exports unprocessed logs along with the jobs that go with that. So to what extent is that a political factor in this very complicated issue?
Who are you asking?
Well, whoever wants to answer. Our panel of quasi-experts.
Somebody maybe knows more about, I admit that. Somebody out here may know more about the economics of exporting. I heard an explanation a while ago of why, the idea, it sounds so simple on the surface, just stop exporting logs and you save all these American jobs and we'll all start processing furniture here and make chipboard here and all that. The reality is that won't occur. And we don't have the machinery, we don't have the mechanics to do it. To be quite blunt, I'm at a loss. I've forgotten the punchline to that. There was a reason for it, but I don't remember what the details of the reason are. But maybe somebody can know.
The reason is 62 versus 10% profit. Come on.
I can speak to the Central Oregon coast, where George said it, Boise Cascade, Willamette Industries, Parker Forest, and it's heavy to industry land, about 45% Forest Service land. The small companies are logging the Forest Service land and taking to their mills. Most of these companies that I mentioned don't have any mills in that area. They're logging their timber on a short rotation, sustained yield basis. They have no place to put the small logs, but to export them. It would be the greatest thing in the world if we could talk the Americans into producing metric lumber that the Japanese would accept, or inches lumber, whatever. But that seems to be one of the big problems as far as manufacturing goes. But anyway, in our local area, if they weren't exporting a market for the logs, and a lot of jobs would be lost. The timber is cut, it's very quickly reforested, and the companies are doing a good job of reforesting in that area.
Did I get you right? You're saying that they're exporting small logs?
Yes.
They're
exporting logs down to 4-inch diameter now.
Yeah. In our area, it's six to 12 inch.
Basically, because the Asian countries are tooled up for small logs, and we aren't.
It's mostly hemlock that's being exported. Douglas fir is sent to the local mill.
For the last 15 years that I've driven around Lake Crescent and the Forks area, and those logging trucks whiz by my car, they're big logs. Real big logs.
Well, yeah, if you're at Forks, it's
in that area,
it's big logs.
The stuff that's going out of Port Angeles is big.
Oh, yeah.
For export.
But that's not coming off of federal land. That's not coming off of federal land if it's going to export.
That's baloney.
It can't be.
That is total baloney.
That's baloney.
On paper it isn't.
On paper it isn't. It's direct substitution. They're doing it. It works.
Okay, Ted.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to answer that. I think you ought to answer that. All right,
that's okay, John, you
are. Yeah. Okay. Where's it coming from if it's not coming from federal land?
Okay.
It's big logs.
The big logs. Okay, in the Forks area,
that's where you're from? That's where you're referred to?
No, I've just, been over there 100 right. times. I know what they're taking
there's
out.
There's a large percentage of the land, is large percentage of land being harvested is on state trust lands. State trust lands do go to export because the state Department of Natural Resources has a mandate by the people of Washington to sell to the person that will bid the highest price. And when the Japanese are bidding three times the price that local mills are willing to bid, now that's mandated by the people. Now, this money that comes from the trust lands is going to support schools, state schools, universities, community colleges. Now, if the export is stopped, which, on a mandate from people, that would be fine. But then the state of Washington has to figure out a way to come up with $200 million that's coming from exports.
Okay, great. All right, Ted.
Warehouse doesn't support the state income tax.
Okay, well, Ted, and then you, and then let's have some of you women think about if you might have an opinion on this.
We're blaming a lot of different people, and we're talking about evil's not the forester, evil's not this and that. The real evil is us, the American consumer, because we demand this one way or the other, and there are some things we can do about that. And the first thing would be, of course, to recycle paper. That's easy. The second thing, which is perhaps more important, is to use and purchase recycled paper. And that's a little more difficult because you're going to have to scrounge for some 7th generation catalogs. You're going to have to order your toilet paper, your paper towels. You're going to have to use fewer napkins, that kind of thing. We continue to demand this output of paper, and as long as we keep putting it on big business, which is heavy to blame, it's not going to change until we start doing it at an individual level. And also, I want to say, here at Holden, maybe we can look at that too. Maybe we can start looking to buy recycled paper. We got to start completing the process, or it's just like cutting down old growth. Sign off and gets used and cutting down more.
They don't make paper out of old growth.
Yeah. Paper is made out of 90%.
It's a very large percentage of old growth. It's actually this concept that old growth is this high quality material is actually a bit overrated. I'm not saying that it isn't, but a very large percentage of it is rot. A very large percentage of it actually goes into chips for paper or fuel for mills, actually. Trying to think of the exact figures. I just finished a review of a paper that was looking at the end products on this. And do you have a percentage, actually, that goes? Percentage of old growth again?
I'm familiar with the second growth, but in the area where I live, most of the material that goes into the pulp mills comes from the waste from the sawmills.
Yeah. And I'm going to say something like 30% of it actually goes into short-term products or fuel from the old growth.
Okay, you had a hand back there.
Yeah, I'm a little curious. This timber, this setting aside, this is federal timber land. Of the total amount that you were quoting that was sent across, what percentage of that comes from the federal forest? Not state, but just plain federal.
Yeah, that's real murky and no one knows because of direct substitution and third-party substitution.
In other words...
And another one is that you can export a log if you've squared it.
Yeah.
So you can also... So you can also send it out that way. So, I mean, no one has any real figures on that because there's so many different ways to substitute it. So I'm not sure.
Oh, I got another one, too. You know, when you were quoting that 2 million... acres, that sounds like a big number. But when you think of it in terms of sections, it's only 50 sections, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't
understand. Yeah, it's about 50 sections, 50 square miles. When they let these things for dead, each one is a square mile, isn't it?
No, on Forest Service land, clear cuts
50 miles by 50?
No, I think it should be larger than that.
Well, 600 and a
square mile. 640 acres in a square mile.
Yeah.
But this is also one area where Forest Service gets a bit of a bad rap. When you have areas where Forest Service property is checkerboarded with private and with state, on federal land, the size of a clear cut is limited to 40 acres. And when you see these huge section clear cuts, those are generally timber industry. And I don't want to give timber industry a bad rap by saying that they're the ones that are doing the large clear cuts, because actually there's some ecological evidence to suggest that the larger clear cuts are better off for the landscape than the smaller clear cuts, because you don't have as much fragmentation of the ecosystem. And if you look at this picture of where you have wherever the newspaper's gotten around, where you see all the small clear cuts, there are a few scientists that believe, and a lot of them are out of the Corvallis lab and were involved with the spotted owl issue on spotted owl decision. A lot of these people believe that we would have a lot less problems if we'd make our clear cuts a little bigger and joined, rather than spreading them out over the landscape. Because what happens on a landscape basis, when you start cutting in these little patches, one thing is you have to build lots of roads. And if there are any long-term problems associated with forestry, it's the roads. Roads cause a lot of erosion. And also, when you get the forest 30% of the way cut with these scattered clear cuts, it actually looks, when you look at it, it actually looks like it's more like 50, 60% cut. Whereas if you had them concentrated, the impact would be less, because you'd have less mileage of roads, plus you have bigger areas that are more concentrated, and so on the landscape level, it doesn't look as bad.
Okay.
Let me just respond, just a factual thing. Your question about how many square miles is 2 million acres, it's 3,125 square miles.
Okay, let's hear from some of the rest of you now that we haven't heard from yet. Okay, two hands over here, and then I have some questions to ask you all too if we run out. Okay, go ahead.
Briefly, I'd like to ask the gentleman if he knows.
Well, I'd rather have you not have posing any more questions.
Oh, no more questions. Okay.
Well, I don't know. Can you hear what's your opinion?
My opinion is that in the last couple of years, I've experienced an arrogant kind of thing going on with the timber industry, and I have this mistrust building because I feel like everybody's ecologically, everybody wants to save the earth. Weyerhaeuser wants to save it. Boise Cascade wants to save it. Everybody wants to save it. But I don't see the practices. We were out in the Ho River area 3-4 weeks ago, just before the decision was made, and somebody clear cut the entrance to the Ho River. I mean, and that's arrogant. We were there 13 years ago, and we're driving along and said, well, here's the beautiful Ho River, the rainforest, and it's just been clear cut.
Yeah,
just
I know.
Right down.
That's state land.
That's, yeah, and it's arrogant, though. I don't know. The loggers in Forks are under siege. They've got a Holocaust time clock. It's emotional. I'm an emotional person. I live on an island, and I don't know what percentage of the 1/5 of our forest was cut on Whidbey Island last year. You may know something about the Petroleum Corporation, who promised to come in and replant, take care of the slash. And of course, one of the largest clear cuts, caught on fire and almost set a major portion of the island on fire last summer. It was beautiful, you know. So I'm emotional about it, because when I have to drive past this stuff in a small island environment, which the watershed is very important. The Petroleum Corporation wants to build houses out there someday. They absolutely intend on doing it, even though they promised they would. So who do we trust?
Okay,
that's
behind
my
you've got, go ahead.
I'm not an expert in logs or anything, but I happen to live in Linn County, Oregon, which is a timber industry county. And I would bet that those pictures that are sent around in on that magazine, there are trees planted there. Mm-hmm. We forget that trees are a crop, just like wheat is a crop. It just takes 100 years for them to grow. And I know that the loggers or the whoever plants the tree are planting trees where they are cutting them down. But we have
they
to
have.
They do it.
They have to.
Well, I know, and it's going to take a long time for them to grow, but I live in this county where people need the jobs, and when you don't have money to buy food for your children or going to lose your job, then you might have a different opinion. And there has to be some kind of a compromise or something. But we don't. We can't have instant new trees to cut. It's going to take a long time.
Okay, let me first and then Dave. Okay, go ahead.
I realize we can't have instant trees.
Can you speak up a little bit more?
I realize you can't have instant trees, but say for the last 10 years, we've been driving up to the Olympic Peninsula, going the southern route, and we've gone by same stretches of land that have been logged off. No reforestation. No replanting has come on any of it. For, and I don't know who it belongs to, whether it's state, or whether it belongs to the Forest Service, or it's private. But nobody's done anything with it. And you look at this bare...
I'm sure if you look, you'll find trees. It generally takes about 15 years to be able to see the trees as they come
up. Why would these companies not do that? They're cutting their own, they're cutting their nose to spite their face. Then if they don't, I mean,
sure it's worth years.
Well, okay, they're mandated by law to replant.
Even
on private land in both Oregon and Washington, California, Idaho.
Okay.
Not sure.
When did the replant law go in?
1972 in Washington.
Okay, these have been cut before that. There's great waste there that have not been planted during anything wrong.
They've had a reforestation law in Oregon since 1939. It was updated in 72.
All right, we got a hand over here. Dave here.
Just to follow up on some of that, a lot of lands have been replanted and they've had a really poor survival rate. And so they've met the letter of the law, but the survival has not been very high. I was going to try and bring out a couple points that maybe haven't been brought out before. The first one is that I agree with Tom. I think we need to stop exports. But in order to do that, first of all, Congress has to give the states the constitutional authority to be able to write their own export laws. Then the second, that's happening right now. Those bills are in Congress. The second thing is that then in Washington, we have to convince our legislature, and I'm sure there'll be, once the laws pass in Congress, there will be an initiative movement towards this. But then our state legislature has to amend our own constitution to allow the DNR to sell timber for less value than what can happen. Did you want to make a quick point on that?
Yeah, I just want to comment on the export concept. Yeah. I think it's going to be tough to get that through the federal Congress until the trade deficit comes into some kind
sure,
of balance.
Sure.
It's a very complex issue.
Oh, yeah, and I'm not saying it's a simple issue.
Right, I agree with you.
That's your process. The next point is that I have a hard time hearing the forest industry blaming the spotted owl when, you know, the modernization is taking more jobs than anything. The fact that there are fewer trees to cut right now is a bigger impact, fewer trees available. And that exports are taking raw logs out, so there's a whole bunch of mill jobs that are gone. And what to me, looking behind that, is what's happening on Wall Street with a lot of the takeover mania. And what happens is that if a company does not maximize their profits by selling those logs for export, they will be taken over. And when they're taken over, those logs will be exported to pay the debt.
This is happening in California for
all over the place. Not only that, up in OMAC Wood Products, their own employees bought out. They wanted to control their own destiny. They bought out Cavenham. Cavenham knew what the company was worth because he knew that if he sold it off elsewhere, those logs could be exported. They could pay to service the debt. Now Cavenham is cutting like crazy to service the large debt that they've imposed, you know, by buying out their own company. So a lot of this debt service, whether it's takeover or buyouts or whatever, is putting on the pressure to export. The export bill is going to hurt a lot of those people that have taken over companies, but it will also keep that pressure from occurring on companies in the future. In other words, a company can protect itself because it knows, hey, I can't export anyway. Somebody else can't take over that company and then export with that idea.
Can I ask you, I'm just curious now, I guess just the whole question of the, it's easy to give Asia a bum rap, sort of, and I don't know, I have a certain caution about that, but how many of you do think that export is a significant part of the problem here and that exporting of logs should be banned?
May I suggest that it's like the United States taking the best resources from the countries of the world, as we have been doing for years, exploiting those resources. Now we are seeing the Japanese exploiting our resources.
Yeah,
not only our resources, but all around the world.
I think it's important.
The diamonds in Australia, the coal, you know, you name
Canada.
It. Every place they will buy the best products, whether it's resource or a finished product that other countries cannot afford.
Okay, Chuck wants to respond, then you've got a hand up here, and then I'm just going to look for some of you who haven't talked yet, okay? And we'll let the people who have already talked talk again if there's nobody else who wants to say anything, okay? Because we only have about 8 or 10 minutes left, okay? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm in favor of a ban on exports. It's a discriminating ban. That is, I think certain types of logs we should be allowed to export.
Sure.
Depends
which types?
Well, I'm thinking of pulpwood, small core logs that they're not going to be milled here anyway.
Right.
You know, they're not going to lose jobs with those.
Okay, you,
One of my feelings is that the forest industry kind of goes along with the arrogant view that was given before. They say that, well, no matter what we're doing, no matter what we have done in the past, what we're doing now is the right thing. And the two things that have come up just in this discussion are a 300 to 400 year cycle to maintain an old growth forest, which I don't have any argument against. And the other statement was clear cutting is the most ecological way of handling the forest. So if you clear cut, for example, every 400 years, which is hard to imagine any company ever waiting that long, at what point in that 400 year cycle do you have an old growth forest again? Do you have it at 200 years? Do
you
have
it
at 50 years?
You never have it.
You never get it back, is my opinion. And in any type of clear cutting situation, you're creating a garden, a crop. You're not creating a forest.
That's what we're doing. We're tree farming. What's wrong with that?
That has nothing to do with the maintaining an ecological system that supports a wide variety of
what's wrong with using some of our land for tree farming?
Well,
the question is how much of the land you need
nothing.
Tree farming.
Yeah, nothing's wrong with tree farming. It's a matter of how much.
Okay, who haven't we heard from yet that wants to, that has some, okay, Mary, did you have your hand up? No, you were just scratching.
Well, I have a comment that I come from Oregon, from a county that is timber dependent, and at one time in my life I did depend on timber as our resource. But the comment that was just lightly mentioned, and many people need to look at, the federal dollars that are realized for your schools and your county roads that come from well-managed forests, and I do get irritated when I hear comments that people say, we do not have well-managed forests. We do have well-managed forests. I have the privilege of knowing many, many people who are professional foresters who really do subscribe to the theory that Earth Day is every day for them. And they did not go to school to well-known colleges in the United States to come out and rape the land. And I personally hate that because I know too many people who are continually educating themselves for well-managed forests in intensive management. We do plant trees. You have to plant within 3 years of harvesting, and he is correct. You cannot see them from the side of the road when they're first planted. There's no question about that. And anyway, I just need to say, too, that our schools and many of our road systems are highly dependent on federal dollars that come from the harvesting of timber, the manageable harvesting of timber off our forest homes.
We're losing money at that, at those sales. I mean, I just...
I could speak to that, too, but I'll do it privately.
We are losing money. I mean, the federal government, I mean, you say it's federal money, but we're losing... I mean, in a recent study, he said 1/6 of the sales that we do through the Forest Service, we lose money on. One that he cited in this book, we lost, United States, $364,000 we lost on one sale. We pay the forest industry money to go in and build those roads. We give them credit for reforestation. I mean, I think that that's kind of a real... Sort of
that's money that we spend to maintain some control. If you don't have that money involved, how do you have any control over what's going on as far as the government?
Okay, let's, we got about 5 minutes left. All right, go ahead. All right, one, and then you want to say something? Great, okay, go ahead.
Okay, a private industry in my area reforests for about $150 an acre. The Forest Service, U.S. Forest Service, with all their bureaucracy, and idealism does it for about $600 an acre. We do just as good or better job than they do. That's where the money's going.
If you manage the same amount that the Forest Service manages with all the bureaucracy it takes to manage that, I doubt very much that you're going to replant the just quoted.
Okay, go ahead.
I think one reason why this issue is so emotional is so far we've only talked about it in terms of economics. And I think the reason why I love the forest is not is more aesthetic and recreation, what, you know, what wilderness means, the difference between a forest and a farm. On Whidbey Island, we saved an old growth forest. It was right next to the state park that was state land and mandated to be sold to support the schools. And it was a long process to preserve it and realize that there are other values for education besides clear cutting, you know, using it as an environmental classroom. And with the pressure on growth in Washington State, there's a real need to preserve recreation areas. It's been pointed out tonight that old growth is not worth very much. The timber, it's mostly rotten. As far as
not
some all of it, 30%.
Clarify that a good old growth tree is worth $10,000. One tree.
Okay. Can I ask, how many of you are Washington residents?
I didn't say anything about value. I was talking volume.
Okay, when we walked through the forest, the first day that it was open for the public after we saved this small little piece of old growth. We were led through it by a forester, and he was looking around saying, oh, that tree's not worth anything, it's all rotten. And he was looking at it only in a dollars and cents, and not in an aesthetic sense that was the reason why we all wanted to preserve it. And just that difference of viewpoint, I think, creates so much misunderstanding.
Oh, I agree. I think aesthetics are probably one of the biggest values from a forest. When I go hiking, I don't go to the warehouse or plantation. No. At least most of the time.
Okay, Dave, and then I got a couple questions I want to ask you, and then we'll end.
I'd say a lot of foresters do have a lot of respect and value for just the aesthetics of old growth forests. And if anyone's really interested in how you might manage for an old growth forest, they ought to read a book by Larry Harris called The Fragmented Forest, which is a new ecological approach that really is just now starting to be looked at intensively. But it's an island ecology sort of approach, which allows you to get a certain amount of wood products out of that area, but still keep the integrity of the forest. And instead of this idea of one big clear cut, where you just let it come back up as a monoculture, you're taking little slices out, you know, and they're regenerating at different times. You have different stages of succession within this island. The islands are managed in such a way with certain distances. They're already doing this with the spotted owl on the Wenatchee National Forest, so that you can, the species that you're managing for can move from island to island.
The Siuslaw in Oregon is actually putting some of Larry Harris's ideas into practice on some experimental basis.
Well, in terms of not only the spacing, but the cuts. And
stuff. But yeah, the cuts and... Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks. I'm just curious, I had no idea this issue of the state lands was so significant here in Washington, even though I am a Washington resident officially, I guess. I'm curious, of you Washington residents, how many would be willing to consider a state income tax? I understand it's a sacred cow here, to in order to be able to save some of this old growth forest.
Yes.
Because how many of you Washington residents would not? How many of you Washington residents would not want a state income tax, and would like to continue to see significant income come from the sale of these forests? Okay.
Until we can get
I realize it's not easy.
Go for it.
I know. Okay. I was just curious. I'll just say, having moved from Minnesota, I was shocked when I saw that Washington had no state income tax. And in my personal opinion, I thought it was really funny. But anyway, okay. All right, go ahead. Okay. Now I open a can of worms.
Yeah, quick question. Minnesota, state of Washington, you add their state income tax, their sales tax. They pay exactly.
Well, there's no question about why your sales tax is too high here. That's
because they've already cut our forest down.
Okay, all right, okay. I'm out of control. I'm really sorry. Okay. Let's just see if any of our panelists want to say anything more, and otherwise, we need to end here. Okay, they don't. Great.